some, there was one iffy man, I don't know if you know the iffy man she's preaching now. Her husband's name, Kenneth Bain. She was working for some doctor's office. I don't know which one. But I do know she lost her job because she took a stand. Some other people, man, that I thought was stronger, caved in. You know, and I just told them, I can't understand you caving in like that. Okay. One of the things, when I ran for the school board, I went on the school board, I talked to my father. And I told him that I was going to do what I thought was right. Okay. That if some pressure, economic pressure or whatever, I lost my job, you're going to have to support me. Because I'm going to do what I think is right. I'm not going to let nobody tell me or try to pressure me. That did happen one time. I was working out in Research Triangle Park. My boss lived in Raleigh. Okay. We had an understanding that he was not to get into my business as to what kind of decisions I made on the school board. I guess somebody must have called him and tried to get him to talk to me. No. I told him I respect you very highly. I respect your academics. You've taught me a lot. Okay. But you don't tell me what to do. You don't know enough about what's going on. You haven't been coming to meetings or whatever. I respect you and whatever, but you're wrong. Okay. And if you got to fire me, then you got to do what you got to do. I'm not changing my mind. He laughed. He's a great guy, you know. And said, I respect you. That's the only time somebody from the economic tried to put pressure on me. There were a lot of people that I knew that I played tennis with at Chapel Tennis Club, and they used to stop me while I was out there trying to play tennis to try to tell me about what they felt that I ought to be doing on school board. And I listened to them, because that's the school board member, I always listen to them. You know, I then told them what I thought I needed to do and why. I gave an explanation. I wasn't arrogant about it, whatever. Lost a lot of friends. The way I look at it, I lost a lot of pseudo friends. Okay? If you're going to be my friend, then you got to respect me enough. For those parts, we disagree. We just say we come from different experiences. And let's agree to disagree. And we go on being friends. But when you drop me as a friend because I won't do what you want, then you're not my friend. And there have been some I just told.
So there was a lot of pressure put on you over redistricting, right?
Redistricting and other decisions.
But what other decisions?
One, you had a very strong advocacy group that had to do with one of the biggest ones that people got all worked up about was, what is it? Don't blank. Let me explain to you what it is. In this community, parents try to track their kids into more academic coursework. It's got a name. I can't think of what the name is. They felt that if they could track their kids into the more strong academics, then it would separate them from the blacks who were not going to be taking these academic courses. So they had a lot of, I mean, they worked very hard to give these these courses and so forth to their children, and did not look at the overall picture of what we were trying to accomplish with all the kids. Okay. Gifted and talented, that's the word that I want to use. Okay. Very strong, gifted and talented advocacy. Okay. And I got more pressure to support some gifted and talented programs. And, you know, I'm for gifted and talented, but not to track. And they wanted a tracking so that they could separate their kids in the total school. In this community, the guidance council spent an awful lot of time in trying to get people's children in the best academic colleges and so forth. So they spent a lot of time filling out applications and contacting whatever. And they were not spending enough time with some kids, man, that had behavioral problems and other things. And so, therefore, one of the things I began to look at, man, was the amount of time that was being spent. Saying, you know, they got to get a better balance. We're losing some kids, man.
Not just the gifted and talented kids, but the kids who are at the other end of the spectrum.
Right. That was another issue, you know, that, and then just trying to get some courses that help with diversity. I mean, this community was beginning to not only be black and white, but there were a lot of children coming in, Asian, and really, in this community, they come from everywhere. Okay. It's only black and white that the physical. Another thing that I had a lot of disagreement with was the Jewish population began to grow, okay, and therefore parents were beginning to come and say, I have some difficulty with some of the holidays and some of the things that are being taught in class that was offensive, okay. And so, you know, I pushed that. Okay. My thing is, if they are here and they're parents and whatever, we got to be more sensitive to.
When did you see this change with the Asian population and the Jewish population increasing in
China? I guess about the time that I was about at the end of my school, being on school board.
Which was?
I can't remember. 80s, 70s. Late 70s, early 80s. So therefore, we began to change the calendar. And we put in policies that said if a Jewish kid, parents wanted them to observe their holiday, then we had to do certain, you know, we had to allow that to happen. Right? It was just not a Christian thing. You know, we began to look at policies that said where people came and they said, you know, Jesus Christ. It's got to be where it's not offensive. Okay, I don't know what that is, but let's get some committees, man, and let's work on these things, you know. The white parents began to say, well, hell, this is our community, and they coming in and whatever, and they ought to be able to be assimilated into. I said, no. Okay. No. There were prayer groups and so forth. We had to look very closely at that. Okay. Because if it was school sponsored, then anybody with a different religion is going to think that the school supported that, and therefore there was a lot of things, man, that we began to look at. You know, I tried to be sensitive. black man, and I feel very strongly about things, man, that were offensive to me being black, then there are going to be a lot of things that are going to be offensive to other ethnic groups. So, you know, I had to really be open. So those were some of the things, you know. We changed the calendars. We did a lot of things, you know.
Did you see any Muslims coming into the school system?
We didn't have very many Muslims at that time. I'm sure they got some now. But it was just, I mean, that wasn't an issue at that time, you know. So I guess the fact that you'll listen and you'll be open, you know, I was supported by a large number of groups. They didn't necessarily always agree, but they knew that I was fair and open. And even now, I was surprised that people thought that I was chairman of the school board for much longer. I was only chairman for a year. But the teachers and everybody considered me chairman for many years. Okay? That had to be because they believed in me, I guess. There are a lot of parents now that I don't know that still talk about me being on school board. I'm introduced as in Chapel Hill as a former school board member. Wow, that's been a long time ago. That's been 20-something years ago, man. They still give me that kind of recognition. People still come up and say, you know, you were a great school board member.
What's the most important thing that you felt you did regarding race relations, ethnicity?
Well, see, the thing is, Bob, you got to understand that I was not just a local school board member. And I was a state school board leader with the national school. I was also a national leader. Okay. So I was able to accomplish a lot of things, man, in other capacities. Okay. Craig Phillips, state school superintendent of it, Department of Public Instruction. You know, I got put on every committee and so forth. I was probably more well known outside of Chapel Hill than I was in Chapel Hill. Okay. I mean, so when you say accomplish things, I guess I've accomplished a lot of things in education, both on the state and local and national level. Things that I probably felt most the best about was I served on a Title III program for education, which was a grant program that we were able to let schools make proposals, and therefore we made grants and so forth to schools for innovative ideas, which gave me a chance to travel all over the state, you know, and I was key. Put a lot of money in a lot of places, man, and did not have monies, like Gates County, which is a very rural county, and didn't have cafeterias, man, with their schools. These are farm communities that just didn't have the resources, couldn't tax farmers and so forth. So I was reading grants, and I had a lot of pull. You know, I had a lot of say-so as to where grants went.
Were these federal or state grants?
Federal
grants.
Yeah. So I had a choice to put money in places, and I put money in Chatham County, I put money in Gates County, I put money in a lot of places. You know.
What did the money go for?
innovative new ideas to try to teach.
Such as?
Well, they may write a program that they were going to do certain things with students. Like in Chatham County, they wanted to put in audiovisual equipment and so forth, so that students who may be having difficulty learning could then go in and into this kind of program and gain other skills. Okay. Programs similar to that where kids were having problems and so forth. A lot of say so. And I went into places like Roanoke Rapids, okay, where the superintendent took the money and did it like he wanted to do it. Okay. I told teachers they didn't have to adhere upon some of the guidelines that they had agreed to do. Strong person, you know, strong superintendent, loved by everybody in that county. Okay. Very difficult. Have a black man come in and say, "I don't understand why you're not following the guidelines." He said, "I don't think I have to." I said, "Well, Monday morning I'm pulling this money out of here. I give you a chance to do what you said you were going to do. If you don't, you don't have a grant anymore." And the teachers and the parents and so forth that had benefited from that put pressure on him. So he had adhered to it. I don't know if that's power or what. The way I looked at it was that they were supposed to be helping kids with problems and that sort of thing. They're going to give it to all the rest of the kids, man, that, you know, that ain't what we agreed to. Same thing over in Durham County, you know, Durham City. The superintendent challenged me and said he wasn't going to do what, you know, I said, "Hey, you know, if you openly challenging me, you know, then I will pull the money out." Teachers begin to come to me, you know, and say, "You know, we're trying to do this, and superintendent doesn't know what's going on in the project, and they're going to try to dictate, you know." So, you know, they leaned on me to do that. That way they could protect their jobs and so forth. So I worked on a lot of state programs that Craig Bill put me on. You know, and I guess the people in the Department of Public Instruction just had a lot of respect and admiration for me. I worked on the School Board Association. I did a lot of training for new school board members when they were coming in. I was an officer for many years. We reached a place where the question was whether or not we wanted to go in different directions. The question came is whether or not our president, the executive director, could take us there. You know, we sort of really had to agonize. He was a good friend. Never had to make a decision because he had a heart attack and he died. Okay. His assistant started lobbying for the position. Okay. He didn't have the skills. He wasn't what we wanted. But persons on the committee to pick thought we ought to just go and give it to him. I said, "No, we're not giving it to him. We're going out for a search. We're going to open this thing up. He is not what we need." Okay. this guy was president of the association, you know, and he just couldn't see me telling him since he was president. But that's the way it stood. And he said, we're going to go to the rest of these members of the board of directors. Okay. You against me. And they went with me. Okay. That destroyed him. I don't know if it destroyed him because I was black or whatever, but he sort of took a stand. And he really didn't have to take a stand. And he was going to resign. I told him, I wouldn't talk to him. I told him, you don't need to resign. And I explained to him why we need to go out for a search and whatever. And, he remained. And later on, he came back and said, you know, you were right. Yeah, you were right. I had taken my stand, and it was got to be personal. And I'm glad that we went out and got, because we got a real good person. You know, the association just took off where we needed to go. So it's small things like that.
You know. During your stay on the school board, did you feel that the inequities that you saw when Lincoln was disbanded and became a mainly white, integrated, if you will, high school. Did you see some of those unfairnesses change, like the blacks in positions of leadership in the school and the teachers mixed races?
Yeah, I saw a lot of change. I really did. And it got to be you know, I really have to say that we had a very good superintendent. We had very good school board members. A lot was changed. There were pockets of people that just wouldn't change. For example, we had a coach, basketball coach, that did a lot of things, man, he really shouldn't have done. Is not being fair, you know, to black kids and that sort of thing. And when those things happened, I went one-on-one and talked to him. Okay. Parents began to look to me as a real thing, man, to speak on behalf of them where things weren't fair. You know, I'm saying to them, they got just as much power. Really, they ought to be the ones. So no, I challenged the person where he was wrong. I backed him up, man, where he was right. Okay. You know, and black kids being abusive, disruptive, and that sort of thing, challenging him. Okay, parents come to me and, you know, I just say, your kid's wrong. I don't know how to support him. I was at the game. Okay. I put him off myself. I went to the coach and told him, put him off. Okay. I'll back you up. Okay. I'm becoming a Chapel Hill people, man, the way this kid acts. Not fair to the school, not fair to his teammates, put him off the team. And I told the kid, you being put off. I told him to put you off. Okay? Those kids respect me this day. One kid I see, man, and he said, hey, Mr. Caldwell. Okay? The parents let the kid rule them. Where they should have been disciplining the kid, man. You know, I told him, man, somewhere down the line, somebody's going to get this kid. You do it now or later. This same parent, let me tell you what I did. I took a group of juniors and seniors to visit some of the predominantly black schools. I took them to Hampton, took them to Norfolk State, took them to Elizabeth City. Went to the superintendent and got an activity bus. Okay. I got the Hampton Alumni Association to give me money, you know, for the trip. And I called the colleges, and they not only fed the kids, but they paid to put them up, okay?
For these all black kids?
Yes, okay. Those school board members didn't know that me and the superintendent did this, you know? Mr. R.D. Smith and Mrs. Smith went with me. I had chaperones, I had the guidance counselors. Everybody knew what I was doing, you know, but my school board colleagues and stuff. I was trying to get some kids interested in going to college. Okay. Very successful. Okay. I went to the parents and talked to the parents before we left. I said, I don't know what kind of guidelines you give your kids, but I tell you what, when we go, I'm in charge. Okay. One little girl was fast. I know she was already been sexually active. Okay. I said to the parent, your daughter can't go unless I'm in charge. I will not bring no girls back pregnant. There will be no pot smoking on this trip. Okay. Just will not be. And I told her, unless your daughter is going to adhere by my rules and regulations, she can't go. And so, being the parents and whatever, she said she would abide by my rules. Well, we were up there, and kids came to my room and said, hey, this girl in there smoking pot. You know. I mean, the kids came. And they knew what my rules and regulations were. And I went in. They were in the room with some fellas and whatever. I separated. You know. Told them, I'm not going to tell your parents, but I don't need no problems out of you from your home. And today, these kids see me on the street and they respect me. I just didn't want to bring no kids back and they're going to be pregnant. out of those trips, just about all the kids found a way to go to school. That year we had 16 seniors from Chapel Hill High School to go to Hampton. They had the money. Yeah. They got scholarships. They worked. But they went to school, okay? They cried. Some of the kids cried because they had never been in to a school where that many blacks went to school. Okay? They were in the band. I took them to a play, you know, and they were seeing black actors singing and whatever. And they just said, hey, I want to go to school. I've been in integrated schools all my life, and we've always been a minority. You know, I'm aspiring to looking at these kids, man, I want to do something with my life. That was very successful. Very successful. School board members found out about it. Called me on the carpet, you know. Called me and the superintendent both on the carpet. So they terminated, you know. They terminated me being able to get an activity bus and take them. They were right, you know, because I had taken all black kids and not integrated kids, you know.
I think it would be great to take the white kids with the black kids. That would have been fascinating.
Yeah.
To let them see another side of black.
Yeah. And they were right, you know. Terminated that, you know. But it was very nice to do while we did it.
How long did you do it?
2 years.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you said before, and that is that you felt an obligation to go to UNC.
Okay.
What made you feel that?
Well, everybody that I've been able to research has been connected with the university.
In your family?
In my family. The name came from Joseph Caldwell, who was the first president of the university. November was a slave, and therefore he was Joseph Caldwell's coachman. And the students and so forth really respected him, and everybody in the community respected him. November Caldwell. I don't know how he got November. He had a son. At that time, being slaves, you get permission to go visit another, slave owner, and therefore he had a kid. His name was Wilson Swain. That was a President Swain at the time. He raised Wilson like he was his son. Okay. He taught him to read and write, and he was the playmate of his son. Really loved Wilson. I got a picture back there, I'll show it to you. But Wilson became the custodian of the university, and Wilson was strong enough that if white kids at the time were acting out or were not doing whatever, Wilson was strong enough to do that. And the same thing my father did at the fraternity house. Well respected. Okay. So as I read the history, everybody in my family in some way had either worked or been connected with the university. November, Wilson, Wilson's children, my father. So therefore, it was just reason to me that I thought I ought to be somehow connected with the university. Also, I think I have to say that the Deets played a role. Here's a book. This is the Yannickian. So therefore, a lot of publications and so forth, I was in there. Okay. The person that took this was named Hugh Morton. I don't know if you know Hugh Morton. Hugh Morton is a photographer, still taking pictures at all the basketball games. We got several photography books and so forth. Hugh took that. Okay. There were other Carolina quarterlies and so forth that had said that at some time there was discussion that blacks would one day go to the University of North Carolina. So I read that and thought maybe I really ought to be the one. I thought I had a picture in here. Me and my he took this. Okay, this came out of the Carolina Quarterly. And what this was about, this is taken at the back of the South Building. And that article said blacks eventually one day would go to the University of North Carolina. Well, I read that, okay? And I really just thought that since I was in this publication, and I was going to be the one to go to the University of North Carolina. I don't know why. It's just the way that I sort of grew up. And it's the way that I was treated by persons at the D Council. And I just thought I was supposed to go. Okay. Nobody said that I was supposed to go. I just thought I ought to go. You know. 1941, the height of segregation. Here I am, and as a black in this.
Are you the only black in the area?
Yes. And only black that's been in there for many years. Okay. So, mentally, I just thought I ought to go, Bob. I don't, you know. I mean, that's why. I thought if anybody would go, it ought to be me, and I thought maybe that they would get me in there. Frank Graham, you know, my grandma had worked with him, and just a number of people that I knew connected with university throughout the years. Right. So,
I can understand that. Natural.
Okay.
I want to change the subject again and go back to something that you had said, that you were the head of this group called, was it Proud?
Prod.
Prod.
Yeah.
And you said we had everybody in there. And when you say everybody, who do you mean by everybody?
Okay, we had a lot of professors and I'm thinking a lot of white professors. We had people that worked in politics, you know, that wanted to be a part of this group.
Did you have white businessmen?
No, we had a white businessman. White businessman was completely controlled by the white man, pretty much a political organization themselves. Now we have white business people.
Were there Asians or at that time?
No.
Were there any Latinos at that time?
No.
Any other minorities? So it was black and white.
That's right. There wasn't no Latinos and others of any consequence at that time. They did have Indians on, East Indians, that were connected with the university. But East Indians, being brown-skinned, didn't want to be anyway connected with other blacks. They didn't want to, you know, because they were really treated as white, even though they had brown skin. So they made sure that there was no misunderstanding.
So it was mainly liberal white professors and the black community banding together.
That's right.
To form this organization to get people. Both black people registered to vote.
That's right. And the organization really called shots, man, as to picking, you know, who we were going to support. At that time, we had to be very secret who we were going to support. Because we did have blacks that thought they had friendships with white, and so therefore they would go back and tell it, man, before we even got home, you know.
What did PROD stand for?
Political of Democracy, PD, I don't know what that, Political Democratic Organization for Democracy. Something that, you know, stood for those letters. I can call Lillian Lee and she can tell me what that means.
One other, and the last thing, and that is regarding the restaurant integration in Chapel Hill, which you said you really weren't part of. Who led that in the community?
Hilliard Caldwell was a key figure that was given for she. There was a person by the name of Harold Forster who was from Chapel Hill but no longer lives here. And there were a lot of young persons that were just coming out of school that were got to be leaders and so forth.
Did you have support from the white community at all for that?
Oh, yeah.
Who were the white leaders who were
supporting? Dan Pollard. Bob Phillips.
The psychiatrist?
Yeah. Just a number of persons like that, I can't.
Dean Smith, was he part of that?
No, Dean really didn't take an active part. But Dan Pollard and Bob Phillips and person really were out there on the fine line.
Did you feel we had good support from the left?
Oh, yeah. Couldn't have pulled it off. We didn't have white support. Okay. We're going to challenge that. Dan Pollard.
I'm sorry. I don't remember Dan Pollard.
Dan Pollard was a professor emeritus with the Institute of Government. Okay. Everybody knows Dan. There were a lot of strong professors and so forth that just had a lot of stature. Joe Straley. And Joe went on to, Joe Straley's, went on to town council, but I mean, even now, that was Dan Oakham, you know, and his wife. Just a number of persons of high stature like that.
Did you have any support at all from the business community? That's the question.
Not support as such, but the business community split down half and half of those persons that supported going ahead and giving public accommodations. And so therefore, they were strong. Strong with their colleagues and so forth. And, put this dog out. Cut that off. Mary Scroggs' husband, who was also on the town council,
Ross Scroggs.
He had L.A. Walters, who later became on the town council. He had a lot of persons that were strong. Mary Scroggs. Mary was, a lot of respect for Mary. Mary pushed me into areas and so forth, man, that I could have never gotten into on a state and national level. I mean, Mary paved the way for me, you know, introduced me to the right kind of people. So it was persons like that that I guess if I thought long enough, things would come. So, as far as business people, I can't think of anybody. But, you know, about half and half. And
well, I've kept you long enough, I think. And I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.